Review of The Barbie Movie and Haunted Mansion. Let's all go to the movies. Let's all go to the movies. Let's all go to the movies and watch ourselves a show. Hello, everyone. I have been going to the movies a lot this summer. And recently, I have both just got home from seeing The Barbie Movie for the second time, and then Haunted Mansion, which as I'm recording came out today. It's very exciting, so I wanted to talk about both of those movies, as I loved them both. So first, let's talk about Barbie. The Barbie movie is fantastic. There's been a huge amount of marketing for it. Lots of, if you want anything with Barbie logos on it, and that's bright pink and everything, now is your time to get it, because everyone seems to be selling it. Which I love. And the Barbie movie itself is fabulous. And warnings for both Barbie and Haunted Mansion. As per usual, these are spoiler-full reviews. Plan to talk about the entire movie in pieces throughout, so I am not going to be biting my tongue about anything. So if you don't want to know what's happening, don't listen to this. Come back later. This has been your warning. All right, so getting into the Barbie movie. It is a fever dream in a lot of ways, but I love it. So I love things like Alice in Wonderland that are crazy and kind of just all over the place and have an internal sort of reality that has nothing to do with the real world's reality. And I am fine with that sort of over the top whimsicalness, I guess. And this movie really worked for me on that level because a lot of it's just completely wackadoo and crazy. And, you know, I'm not claiming that any of it has any sort of reality to it, but it's got an internal logic that really works. As far as, you know, Barbie dolls being stuck on their toes all the time because dolls don't have, you know, Barbie dolls don't go to flat foot ever. The fact, you know, that they're taking the shower and there's no water coming out and they pretend to drink and there's nothing in their cups and all of that really whimsical Barbie world stuff. And they all have these jobs and everything, but they don't actually seem to do anything because it's a fantasy world. And, you know, there's a later on where they just go into a full, like, the Kens all have this huge, like, music video that they go into, which is fabulous. And I love it. But again, it's this very, like, kind of whimsical, all over the place-ness to the movie. And I could see that not everybody would love that about it, that it's just, you know, Barbie's running through an office building and suddenly she's talking to Ruth, who's the ghost of the lady who created Barbie, but you don't know that till later. And like, she's in a random like farmhouse kitchen, but then she's back in the office building. And there's a lot of that kind of stuff where it's just boom, 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 random, random, random. And it all makes sense into a cohesive picture if you're able to kind of step out of the realms of logical physics and take on the logic of the movie versus the logic of the world as we know it. And, you know, suspend your disbelief and that kind of thing. And if you do that, it works so well. And I love that kind of movie. I love the whimsicalness, as I was saying. So it really, really works for me. So it's hard to describe what the overall plot of this movie is. But basically, you're starting out with Barbie, who is stereotypical Barbie, who is like the original Barbie. And she's having her wonderful Barbie day, where everything is perfect and the Barbie can be anything. And they're, you know, the president and astronauts and Nobel Peace Prize winners and all of this. And they run the world, or Barbie Land at least, and everything's perfect. And the Kens are just kind of there. They're accessories. They don't really do anything. And there's also some discontinued dolls like Alan and Midge? I don't know. The pregnant one. And then, some of those other, like her little sister, who's the babysitter. Anyway, all those dolls. Is that Stacy? Or Stacy the little sister? I'm not sure. Either way, all the different Mattel dolls throughout. There's all these different dolls, including discontinued versions of dolls. Like, there's apparently one that was a sugar daddy, which was a guy who had a little dog named Sugar, and he's her daddy. And then there was a Ken, apparently, that was made with a magic earring. I don't know. They apparently are real dolls. And so is Alan, who is apparently Ken's best friend. who knew that this was a thing? They're all up in the movie, so I learned all sorts of Mattel, or I guess Barbie, history of different discontinued dolls. They also had a lot of like old clothing, or like clothing that was really sold with dolls at different times. Some vintage, maybe it's a better word than old, vintage clothes that are from that were like a human size that were made for the actors that are real like doll clothing that they sold at one time. So from that aspect, it was really kind of fun to see some of these, including there was one where there was a doll that had a real video camera in the Barbie with like a screen on her back. I remember those. I feel like I saw ads for those as a kid. But that brought back memories. I don't think I ever had one, but I remember them. It was weird to see an actress dressed up like that. But anyway, it was really so there's all that kind of stuff interspersed throughout. Trying to get back to the plot. The plot is basically that someone in the real world has been playing with Barbie, who is attached to this Barbie in Barbie Land, and has been very, very sad and is causing havoc between having havoc in this particular Barbie in Barbie Land, and causes a portal to open up between Barbie Land and the real world. And so this Barbie and her Ken come through the portal to see the real world. So she's supposed to go and like make her person feel better, and she assumes it's a child. And she kind of has these visions of this child when she gets there and goes to see the child, who takes her to task, and realizes she's not there for that child, who's a tween, so he's middle school. She's there for the mom. Mom is the one who's been playing with her daughter's old dolls and been very unhappy recently. And her solution is to take the mom and the daughter back to Barbie Land. In the meantime, Mattel CEOs have been alerted that one of their dolls is out on the loose, and they are searching for her. They get her, they catch her, but she escapes again, and then she goes with the mom and daughter back into Barbie Land. Also, in the meantime, the Ken that came with her into the real world has learned about patriarchy, and he goes back to Barbie Land and infects everyone with it. And so they have taken over Barbie Land and turned it into Ken World or Kendom. They can't come up with it, but he has a Mojo Dojo Casa House, which just means house, which is pretty great. So the Kens have taken over and started patriarchy, and yeah, it's pretty scary. And Barbie freaks out about it and has a full-on meltdown. And so now this human mom and daughter who are in Barbie Land have to help the Barbies fix the world and bring it back. And how they do that is that the mom is able to talk about how hard it is to be a woman, and she says some of the basic things about how, you have to be pretty but not too pretty, you have to be thin but not too thin, and you can't talk about wanting to be thin. You have to say you want to be healthy, but you do have to be thin, and on and on and on about these like contradictory statements about how you have to be in charge, but you can't be bossy, and you can't be seen as mean, and we have to bend over and backwards and put ourselves on all these pretzels to try and be liked. Which she said a lot of statements in that part that I really resonate with, I think are true of these expectations we have of women that are crazy. But anyway, so saying these things to one of the Barbies who's been sort of quote unquote like infected with patriarchy brings her back to herself. And so they're able to sort of collect the Barbies and I don't know, bedazzle them, bring them back to themselves. They start an epic fight amongst the Kens. They get the fights like the Kens like fighting amongst each other. And so that's when they have this weird like music video battle, which is fabulous, by the way. It's a great scene. Again, it's part of that whimsical makes no sense. Like they're suddenly in a music video and like doing this weird dance ballet thing. Ballet fighting? I don't know, but it's crazy. It makes no sense, and I love it. It was fabulous. So they do that. It's great. And then when the Kens come back from their epic battle, they've come back to find that the Barbies have taken Barbie Land back and have, taken back their dream homes, and they're no longer the Mojo Dojo Casa houses. And they kind of have it out with the Kens and talk about how they're taking their world back and all of this. And that is when the CEO of Mattel and all his like hide honcho guys show up, and they're in Barbie Land, and they're talking too about changing, about getting the world back together, and how this is how it need, how everything's better. And everything does seem to pretty much be better for everybody except for our original Barbie, who has changed quite a lot from her stereotypical Barbiness and isn't really able to go back. And so then she has this heart-to-heart with Ruth, who it turns out is a ghost who she met running around in the real world in the Mattel offices earlier, who was the creator of Barbie, and has this kind of heart-to-heart with her about what it is to be human and how ideas live forever but humans don't. So if you, you know, decide to become a human, you're mortal now, and it's a lot harder and messier than being a doll. And it's a really beautiful moment. There's a song by Billie Eilish in there that I was obsessed with before I saw the movie, or the music video came out a couple weeks ago, and I watched it a million times. I really, really enjoy the song, and then I saw it in the movie, and I really loved the moment with that bit of the song. The song is only in for, like, I don't know, a couple 30 seconds maybe in the movie, but it's a very impactful scene in my opinion. And then they play the whole song in the credits, and it's a great song. I really enjoy the song. I think it's What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish. Highly recommend. Go listen to it. It's really good. But this stereotypical Barbie decides to become a human, and she goes into the human world and is apparently living with the mom and daughter and her husband. The mom and daughter that came to Barbie World with her have taken her in, and we end the movie with her going to see a gynecologist because she's a human now, which is part of this kind of ongoing jokes where she had said earlier that she didn't have genitals because she's a Barbie. And that's how it ends, with the Billie Eilish song going over the credits. Or, well, first it's the Aqua song with some rap about I'm a Barbie girl, but it goes to the Billie Eilish song in the credits eventually. And that's the movie. It's hard to explain, but it's so good. There are so many laugh out loud moments and, like, physical comedy jokes that are fabulous. And it's funny throughout, but it's also very touching and heartwarming. It goes into kind of the idea of what it is to be a woman, right? And how hard it is in the world to be all the things that you need to be a woman, about working hard, but also being a mom and, you know, expectations on your looks and all of this that, as a woman myself, I felt resonated with me very well. I really enjoyed all of that. I thought that the part about Ken just being an accessory was very comical. And by the end, they're realizing that Ken's a person too. I mean, Ken's a doll, but, you know, that the Kens are not just an afterthought and accessory, that Ken has to figure out who Ken is outside of his relationship with Barbie, that he is not just Aunt Ken, that it, you know, it's, it, they're talking, starting with the phrase, it's Ken and or it's Barbie and Ken. Ken isn't anything without Barbie. And Barbie's like, no, you have to figure out who you are without Barbie. You are not who you are because of your girlfriend. You need to figure out who is Ken. And the Kens kind of take that as a motivation to, you know, become who they are. And it has a funny little line that, you know, the Kens still don't have a lot of power in Barbie Land, but don't worry, eventually they will end up with as much power in Barbie Land as women have in the real world, which I thought was a cute little tongue-in-cheek line. That, you know, it's admitting that Barbie Land is also not gender perfect. It is kind of the opposite of the real world, where the women are in charge and the men are just, like, kind of afterthoughts. And realizing that that's not perfect either. And that they are growing and changing the way, hopefully, we are in the real world. Just going in opposite directions because they started in opposite places. Which I found really interesting. They talked about some pretty deep issues about societal norms, about feminism, about what it is to be a woman. And I thought they did it really well. They mismanaged to talk about some really deep, interesting issues while keeping the movie light, fluffy, and funny. And I was very impressed. I had seen some negative press ahead of time. I know that there were some religious people who were very anti this movie. Mostly the stuff I heard was about transness, because there's apparently a trans actress in the movie. And all I can say is that she plays a doll. There's no mention of the fact that she is trans in the movie. It's not like she's a trans Barbie. I don't even know what that would mean. She's Barbie. She's playing a Barbie who, they make very clear, doesn't have genitals. So I don't know that it matters that she's played by a trans actress. So I think that that weirdness was kind of just a hullabaloo. They're talking about how there's all this LGBTQ stuff in the movie, and I also don't see how that is true. None of the characters, I mean, we're focused almost exclusively on Barbies, who again do not have genitalia, do not have sexualities. They're all paired off in Barbie Ken pairs as far as like their romantic groupings. But they're, not ha even kissing, let alone having sex or anything. So I don't get how that is anything. Yeah, and then the Kens are try to play out over the top masculinity for a bit, and that's when they take over and are doing Kenland, and then they go back to being themselves, which some are more feminine, some are more masculine, and same with the Barbies, some are more overtly feminine, and some are, are in more traditionally masculine tasks. It doesn't really matter. It's more about your, it's, I mean, it's very much a message of be yourself and be who you want to be. So I guess if you think that that is somehow forcing the LGBTQIA plus agenda down your throat, like I've heard people say, just because it's telling people to be yourself. But I mean, yes, that is part of the, I guess, agenda, quote unquote, of them, but I don't see that that is exclusively LGBTQIA plus. It's just hopefully the agenda everyone has is be yourself and be who you want to be. I don't see how that's a bad message that's indoctrinating children. I feel like that's the message of most children's movies. But to be clear, this is not a children's movie. This, I mean, it's not inappropriate for kids, I don't think. In the theater I was in today, at least, there were a bunch of kids there. Not like little kids, but there were kids, and I think they were all fine. It wasn't, there wasn't anything like explicit or inappropriate for children in any way that I saw. But it wasn't designed specifically for kids, and I bet some of the jokes would go over their head, that kind of thing. Like, it was definitely a movie made for adults to watch, in my opinion, but I don't think it, but I think there's stuff that kids would enjoy about it. And it's not inappropriate, in my opinion. So I don't get what all the like religious hullabaloo was about it, about it being so awful. And I saw this whole thing about how like demons are gonna come and possess you if you watch it, and like, well, A, I mean, I don't believe that that's how demons work, but B, like, I don't get why this movie is particularly demonic in any way. It's literally about Barbie dolls. Like, come on. It's not that deep. Again, we're talking about some deep, interesting issues when we're talking about, feminism and women's role in the world and how it's changing and patriarchy and all of that. But at the end of the time, it's also just a silly, fluffy, fun movie. So I don't get the anger in any way. I loved this movie. It is so fabulous. I love being in Barbie World, how bright the colors are, the clothes everyone is wearing, the cartoonishness of it, even though it's a live action film. I love all of that. And like I said, I really love the kind of what I call the Alice in Wonderland effect of it all, where it's, you kind of have to let, where kind of physics don't apply here. Like, the laws of physics do not apply, and it's this weird alternate universe with different rules, and I love that kind of thing. And I do think that it is internally consistent in that sense, but it is very clearly not the real world. And even when they come to the real world, there are parts of it that are the real world, but once you're in the Mattel building, that's not really the real world either. That's almost Barbie, that's like in between Barbie Land somehow. It's also magic. I don't know. So you have to kind of let the, like I said, the laws of physics go, but it is fabulous beyond that. I really, really enjoyed it. And I highly recommend. So that is what I have to say about the Barbie movie. Love it so much. The music throughout is fabulous. The costuming is amazing. I really enjoyed being in Barbie Land, and like the dream houses and how they have all those sets are just chef's kiss beautiful. Love it so much. Oh my goodness. Before we move on, I forgot to mention the most important thing ever, obviously. There is a Pride and Prejudice like piece of the Barbie movie. When Barbie comes back to Barbie Land and that turns into Ken Land, and she's dealing with that, she has this depressive moment and They have a little commercial for depressed Barbie who wears sweatpants and eats ice cream. And in the commercial, depressed Barbie watches Pride and Prejudice with Colin Firth for the 17th time or something. And so she's watching, and there's a little clip of Colin Firth and as Mr. Darcy, and it's Lizzie and Darcy, a little scene of them, and yeah, it's a little cameo of Pride and Prejudice, and it's her movie that she watches in her depressive state, and I felt personally called out by this because it is definitely my feel-good movie. If I am in a really bad mood, if something bad has happened, that is the movie that I put in to make myself feel better. So yeah, they got me with that one, and I can't believe I forgot to talk about that because it was amazing, and I've been seeing it in all the Jane Austen forums I'm on Facebook, online, and stuff. People are talking about it and having a great time with it, and I thought it was a fabulous little piece to put in and very true to life for me anyway, and people who love that movie, because I do think it's a great watch when you're just not fe when you're not feeling good and when you're just feeling kind of meh with the world. It is a great thing to put on and feel better about life. So I was super happy with that little cameo, and I cannot believe I forgot to talk about it. So I had to come in and do this little extra piece for you. But yes, a little Jane Austen tie-in for the Barbie movie. So Jane Austen is really making a comeback, or like she ever went away. But she was in Elemental, they had a little Pride and Prejudice nod. She's in the Barbie movie, they have a little Pride and Prejudice nod. Good Omens season 2 just came out. I have not watched it yet, but I saw a thing online that there is apparently a Pride and Prejudice nod somehow in the season 2. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm very excited to find out because I will be watching it in the next couple days. So apparently she's in everything this summer. Well, at least Pride and Prejudice is, and I am all for it. Everybody make, comments about Pride and Prejudice. I mean, it would be nice if they did some of the other novels, but to a mass market audience, I suppose Pride and Prejudice is the most well known and the most likely that people will understand the reference that you are making, so that makes a lot of sense. In any case, I loved the reference in the Barbie movie to Pride and Prejudice. Love the little clip that is in this random little commercial that they have, which it was beautiful. I love it. Okay, that was it. I just had to mention the fact that I did notice and remember that there is a Pride and Prejudice moment in the Barbie movie. And I loved it. Okay, bye. All right, and now we're moving on to the other movie that I watched, which I just saw today, and it just came out into theaters today, July 28th, and that is Haunted Mansion by Disney, another movie that I love. So I am a big Disney head. I went in with very high expectations, and this movie, I think, did a really good job meeting them. I am a Disney fanatic. I go to Disneyland pretty regularly, and I love the ride Haunted Mansion. And throughout this movie, there are so many sort of Easter eggs for people who know the ride. There are people being pushed around in chairs that look like the doom buggies you ride in the ride, the actual ride at Disneyland. So that's fun. There's the stretching room from the ride. There are the busts that turn and look at you. There's the moving armor. There's the ballroom or dining room with all the ghosts dancing and on the chandeliers. There's the murderous bride who kills all her husbands with an axe. There's the graveyard with all the ghosts dancing and singing around. There's Mr. Gracie, who is the owner of the manor, from way back when. He's there as one of the ghosts. And they make a big deal of the Hatbox Ghost, which just came back into the ride not that long ago. Within the last couple of years, I think. So he was a character in the ride originally, way back when the ride came into being, I think in the 60s sometime. I don't know the exact timeline, but before I was alive. And it didn't work out as an effect, apparently, so he was gone for a long, long time, and he just came back within the last couple of years. They put in the Hatbox Ghost, and it's character who kind of laughs evilly at you and has a head that is sometimes on his head, and that's the cool effect that it, like, in the ride disappears and then goes and reappears in the hat box that he's carrying. That's why he's the hat box ghost. So his head literally goes back and forth between, and it's a really cool effect in the ride. They did a very good job. And that's why he wasn't there for so long, is because the effect didn't work out originally, and it apparently took them this long to redo it and get the effect to work the way they wanted it to. But the current effect that they have is really cool, and I like it. So in the movie, they have all those pieces of the house, and it is also set in Louisiana, outside of New Orleans, and it's a big old manor house, which is, you know, copied of the house that is in Disneyland, and set in Louisiana. So it's very cool. I went to New Orleans on vacation last March and took a cruise out of New Orleans and spent a couple days there. And the movie, especially the first couple minutes, goes around the French Quarter quite a bit. And every time they kind of go into the city, that New Orleans is the city that they go into. So we get to see that a little bit. And it was very cool. For me, I felt like I was back in New Orleans. I was like, I've been there. I really enjoyed that. It was a little nostalgic for me, like little home videos of my recent vacation. So I really enjoyed that aspect that was personal for me. That they filmed, obviously, on site, because I recognized the places in New Orleans. So that was really cool. And then they went to, but most of the movie then would go to the actual Haunted Mansion, which is a cool old building out in the swamp, basically. And basically the crux of the movie is that this woman is coming back to her roots. So her mom was from Louisiana, and she had moved away to, I want to say New York. I'm not sure if they're explicit about that, but some way away from the South, I'm pretty sure. And she was a doctor up there. And we don't know this at the beginning, but you find out eventually that her husband has died over the past year. Her son is struggling with that. And so she wanted to get a fresh start for them both. And she finds this cool old manor house to buy in Louisiana. And she wants to start a bed and breakfast out there with him. And so that's the goal, is to get him meeting new people and having this cool new experience to help get him out of his funk, basically. So they come out to this old house, and it is immediately apparent that it is super duper haunted. And she basically is like, and no, we're out. And they make a run for it. But the problem is that as soon as you step foot in this house, you can never leave. Because you have to, because this is something that they took directly from the ride of Beware the Hitchhiking Ghosts. Once you go into the Haunted Mansion, beware hitchhiking ghosts, because they will haunt you until you return. And so they both get, so they get ghosts that follow them, and they haunt them crazily to force them to go back to the mansion. And so now they are trapped. They can't leave. Or at least they can't spend the night anywhere but the mansion. They can leave for like day trips and stuff, but the ghosts come with them. But they are not really allowed to leave the mansion because the ghosts follow them until they return. Which is something they take from direct, like another thing they took directly from the ride, and they somehow made it part of the story, which I thought was cool. So she and her son are now caught there. And I'm going to tell you the story as kind of what we know the truth to be by the end. This is not necessarily the order in which they tell it to you in the movie. So she reaches out to who she thinks is a priest and who's an exorcist to come and, like, exorcise the house. But we find out later that he is not actually a priest. He's just a guy trying to make a buck, and he has a priest costume, so that's fun. So he comes out and is unable to help, but now he is trapped because he has set foot inside the house, so now he has to live there because the ghosts keep making him return. But he reaches out, he finds this guy who used to be like an astrophysicist or something, worked something very sciencey. And his backstory is that he was working on something to do with like lenses. He was working on for like the space program. So like, I'm blanking on what it... What do you look through to see to the stars? Telescopes. That is the word I'm looking for. He works on something with lenses with telescopes. or something along those lines. And we see him meet a woman at a bar on New Year's, and it's a very sweet little meet cute. And she gives ghost tours and is into haunted things and such. And we see them be very cute. They get married, and then we find out a ways later, but they get married and are very cute together, and she ends up dying in a car accident, and he is, mourning her. He is very, very sad, and it comes out later in the story that she'd gone off to get a snack or something, had stopped off at Baskin-Robbins to get ice cream, and then was in a car accident on the way home, and that she had asked if he wanted to come with her on this particular trip, but he was busy working on something and had been kind of short with her and be like, "Meh, I'm busy, I can't go, I'll talk to you later." And has kind of felt that guilt ever since, that he feels like he was sort of rude to her the last time he saw her because he was busy in the middle of something and kind of brushed her off. And he's just been sort of being guilty about that forever and feeling like he's not sure that she knew how much he loved her. And, how everybody else in the movie is trying to comfort him and say, "Yes, she knew. I'm sure she knew." But it was a very touching story. So that's this dude, and the way he comes into this story is that while his wife was still alive, he started working on this special camera to try and be able to capture pictures of ghosts. He was taking his knowledge of like lenses or something, that he had this idea of how we'd be able to capture ghosts. So he'd been working on that, and when she died, he became kind of laser focused on that and gave up the rest of his life to try and do it. And a lot of that was because he wanted to specifically get a picture of her. And he has over time become very disillusioned. He doesn't believe in ghosts anymore because he's never been able to capture it with his camera, even though he somehow has like published about it. And he's sort of lost all credibility in science because everyone thinks he's crazy because he was doing this ghost stuff. So the fake priest guy comes to him and wants him to go take pictures of the house. And so he does, he goes, he takes, but his camera, his battery is dead, and so he's just kind of pretending, and he doesn't believe in ghosts anymore, so he thinks this whole thing is crazy and stupid. And then he leaves. And then he is haunted by like a seafaring captain dude. So you see like wet footprints following him in water, and it's very scary, and he has to return to the house, and then he yells at them for like, "How dare you? Why not, didn't you warn me?" But now he is now trapped at the house too, because every time he leaves, he gets haunted by the ghost. So they all have hauntings. So now they are there, and his camera now works, and he's able to take pictures of some of these people. And then they also then recruit a medium, who is then also mad and trapped with them. And so that is our cast of characters. Well, no. Then there's one last guy. Danny DeVito plays a professor who is into like haunted houses, who they at this point are trying not to get him trapped in the house because he's got a bad heart and he's about to have heart surgery, even, they talk about. So they try to just steal some papers from him and leave him behind because they don't want him to get hurt. But he refuses to be left behind and chases after them and like ends up getting stuck in the house too. So in the house now we have the mom and her kid, the fake priest, who everybody thinks is a priest still at this point, the guy with the magic like ghost camera, the medium, and the professor who has done stuff about haunted houses, who's like history professor. And they are all now in this house trying to figure out what to do, and the medium and the history professor have some stuff, they put together some stuff. We have some history about the house, that the initial owner appears to be a Mr. Gracie, whose wife died, and then he eventually killed himself. And he had invited a very famous medium, Madame Leota, who is also directly from the ride. And so, and but she has disappeared, and there have been, since that time, 66 people have died in the house. And all violent deaths of various kinds. And so it's seen as a very scary place, and they always die on full moons, which are coming up in 4 days, so they don't have a lot of time. as they are trapped in this house. And everything always goes crazy after midnight. They're safe during the day mostly, but after midnight things go haywire and crazy and get dangerous. So they end up finding a séance room eventually, and they end up finding Madame Leota, who has been like locked into her crystal ball as a soul. And we find out that the Hatbox Ghost dude, who is the evil character that we are searching for, you know, that he's the one who's causing all these problems. And Madame Leota has been trapped into her crystal ball by him. And we find out that he has, at this point, 999 ghosts that are attached and stuck to this house. And we don't actually, I don't think, find out exactly what he's going to do, but we know something really bad's going to happen when he gets a thousand, when he gets his thousandth ghost. That is going to be enough to do something crazy and horrible, and we need to stop him from killing one more person, getting his one last soul. The other kind of thing that we find out is his last soul has to be willing, which the other ones did not. They were just murders mostly. But the last soul has to willingly decide to do this, and that last soul will get him to his thousandth soul. So all of the people, humans now, have to stay alive. So they are trying to figure out what to do. They find out that they can do a banishment of this guy. But they have to get something of his, so they figure out who he is. And there's kind of a stupid little scene, but it's funny, where they go to a police sketch artist and say that a guy mugged him and described the Hatbox Ghost dude. And the guy is like, draws them a ghostly like skeleton face, and they're like, "Oh yeah, that's it. Now put some skin on him." And so they somehow trick the police into helping them, and they figure out who this guy is. Who he was a some sort of rich, I don't know, tycoon of some kind in the South way back when, and that after his mom died, his father was very cruel to him and sent him away, and nobody really knows what happened to him for a while. But when after his father's mysterious death, he shows back up and takes over the family company and all the money, and he throws these lavish parties, but people keep dying at the parties, and but the bodies are never found, so I guess we don't know that they're dying, but people keep disappearing from these parties. And eventually his staff are like go on revolt against him and kill him. But his head is never found. Only his body is found. So there's that. Anyway, so we find out that's who it is. So they know where his house is, and his house is a like national monument or something. So it's kept as like a place where you can go do tours and such. So and part of that is now that they know who he is, they need to find something that he owned so that they can bring it back and do the banishment of him. So they go to his house, and they're kind of asking all these questions about the house, but nothing is original to the home. It's all like replications and things. So they're having a really hard time, but they eventually find this like crawl space underneath where the kid has to go down because he's the only one who can fit. So I don't know how the Hatbox guy, before when he was alive, was able to get down there, but maybe the opening was bigger back then. I don't know. But anyway, you get down there and you find, it's essentially a graveyard, like in the crawl space under the house, where they even have headstones and stuff, which is taken kind of directly from the ride, because they're all these like kind of jokey headstones with rhymes and stuff. And that's what these headstones are. They're sort of jokey rhymes. I don't remember any of them, and we didn't have enough time to really read them all, but that's what they looked like to me. I think that's what these are. So I'm assuming of all his victims that he'd killed while he was alive in his old house. So that's there. And they also then find his head and his hat. The kid does. So the kid takes the hat, and they make a run for it. They're going back to the house. Let me back up again. So we also find out that why there are so many ghosts here in the house is that Master Gracie, when he had the home after his wife died, he brought in Madame Leota to do all these seances because he wanted to talk to his dead wife. But his wife never showed up. She was not a ghost. She had moved on completely. She was at peace. But he was obsessed and wanted to keep going to try and get her back. And so they did seances every night for an entire year. And in doing so, they kept sort of opened up a portal to the other side, and a bunch of ghosts came through. to kind of watch and just be around, hang out. But also, somebody, the Hatbox Ghost, the evil dude, ended up being one of those who came through and caused problems. And his first murder was Master Gracie himself, because he started messing with Master Gracie and convinced him that his wife was there and wants to see him again, and I'll see you again if you kill yourself. And so he commits suicide to be with his wife, even though his wife is not a ghost and not the one doing it. It was the Hatbox Ghost who convinced him to do it, which is pretty dark. So anyway, that's how this Hatbox Ghost got here, and he's been killing people ever since. And so, anyway, that's how we end up with the 999 Happy Haunts, which is directly from the ride. There's the line as you go through that there are 999 Happy Haunts here, but there's room for 1,000. Any volunteers? If you insist on lagging behind, you may not need to volunteer, is how the line goes. So anyway, I thought that was a nice little, again, callback to the ride itself about the 999. Although in this movie, they are not Happy Haunts. Though they will be by the end, I suppose, so that'll work. And that's kind of, I think, the ride now is taking us through a house, maybe after this has happened, but because there are Happy Haunts by the end. So anyway, the Hatbox Ghost is there. They get the hat. They come back to try and banish him, but the Hatbox Ghost is fighting back, you know, puts his hat into the fire to try and burn it so that they cannot banish him. And while that is happening, they are also, or the Hatbox Ghost is also trying to really darkly coerce the kid into committing suicide, because he is pretending to be the kid's dad and kind of do the same thing he did to Master Gracie way back when, where the dad is trying to convince him to, he really wants, that he really misses his son and he wants to see him, and if you just come through here, you know, because again, this last soul has to be willing, so they're talking the kid into it, and he almost has him convinced, but they are able to catch him and kind of break him out of the trance and get him out of there. But then the Hatbox Ghost has another kind of end of thing with the guy whose wife died, again with the same thing, that I can get you to your wife, although it's clear he's lying. And when that doesn't end up working, saying that if I take you, the rest of your friends will be free. And so he almost gets him through that. But again, that doesn't end up working. They are able to banish him with the what's left of the little scrap of hat that didn't burn. And they win. And then all the ghosts want to stay because now they're happy to be here. So now they are the 999 Happy Haunts that are in the ride. And Madame Leota is stuck in her crystal ball, but seems happy enough there as well. And so they end up keeping the house, and now that the Hatbox Ghost is gone, the rest of the ghosts are fun, and, you know, they have these big parties every night, and it's a good time. And that's how the movie basically ends, with the big party scene that you see in the ride, with the guy on the chandelier, and everybody ballroom dancing, and the music coming through on the piano, and it's the music from the ride itself, which is super fun. And yeah, I had a great time with it. It was a really fun movie. I highly recommend. There are some definitely poignant moments. There's a lot of dealing with grief because all these characters are dealing with, you know, there's the mom and son dealing with the loss of their dad slash husband. There's the guy dealing with the loss of his wife. There is Master Gracie dealing with the loss of his wife. There are all these people dealing with grief and loss, and how to sort of move on with your life. Without that person, and, you know, how to kind of accept that you are still alive and you have to keep living. And I think it was a really nice touch. I thought it was well done. As someone who, I lost my mom when I was 21, and that is a grief that stays with you. And I was very touched by the way they talked about grief and thinking about somebody who's on the other side, so to speak. So I really liked that. So there were some definitely sad moments. I cried, but there were also some really funny moments. There were some jump scares. I mean, I am not a horror movie fan. I can't do horror, so this was not a horror movie, but it was as much horror as I could take, which I really enjoyed. And I thought it was really well done. I very much enjoyed myself. I had a fabulous time with it. Highly recommend, and especially if you have been on the ride at Disneyland, which is very similar to the ride at Disney World, so that one too. There's a lot of, they took so much of the ride and put it into the movie that it works beautifully. I really, really loved it. Like finding all the little pieces that are directly from the ride. Now I need to go back and ride the ride so I can like put it in context with the movie. I'm like, oh, there's that character and there's that piece of what it is from the ride and all of that. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And yeah, it was a really good attempt. I know they made Haunted Mansion movie years ago with Eddie Murphy that did not do so well. I enjoyed that movie as well. I mean, it was more of a kind of ridiculous comedy. I don't really remember. I haven't watched it in years. But I enjoyed it as a child. But this one was really, really good. I really liked it. I will definitely watch it again when it comes out on Disney Plus, which I will be excited to see if there are any more details that I missed on just the one watch in the theater. But I would highly recommend if you're a Disney fan at all, if you've ever been on the ride, if you enjoy the ride, this is not to be missed. It was so much fun. And yeah, they did a really good job. I think that they balanced the kind of horror comedy thing perfectly. Again, I am not a horror person. This is not a scary movie in that sense. It is safe for the children. I would say if a 5-year-old couldn't watch that horror movie, then I can't. That is my level of horror. I can't do gore at all. I can do psychological thrillers a little bit more, but no gore at all. And I don't know, this movie was right up my alley. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I knew that probably going in because I'm a big Disney fan and I love this ride. So, I thought it worked wonderfully. It was a really fun story. It was really fun how they were able to work in all these details from the ride itself to make it work. And I don't know how long they've been working on this movie, but I wonder if they brought back the Hatbox Ghost because they came up with the storyline and needed the Hatbox Ghost to be in the ride. Or like if they brought the Hatbox Ghost back first and then decided to add him to the movie, or I don't know the timeline because it feels like the Hatbox Ghost hasn't been back all that long. So I don't know if like this movie would have been in production before it came back, or like how basically which one came first, the Hatbox Ghost in the ride or in the movie, like which idea came first for them to put that back together again. I have no idea. This is just pure speculation on my part, so I don't know. But it worked, and I really enjoyed it, and it was lots of fun. And I liked that all the ghosts stayed, and it was still a haunted mansion at the end. And we got to the place where they are happy haunts, that they want to be here, they do not want to move on. They're having a jolly old time and having a big old party in the afterlife in this mansion, and that the mom and her son are living there and kind of taking care of all their friendly ghosts. I love a friendly ghost story by the end. And the ghosts actually do all help out throughout in different aspects of the movie. And there's a fun scene towards the end where the captain water ghost dude who helps them find the hat with of the Hatbox Ghost at, when they're off at his museum house, whatever. He had communicated that he would help them if they took him to the sea, so they are due at the end end up taking him to the ocean, and he sort of steals a boat and sails off into the ocean, which I think is fun. Yeah, so highly recommend that movie as well. I like them both. They're very different movies, but they are both a lot of fun. So Barbie and Haunted Mansion, both fun movies. Highly recommend. Different vibes, but both fabulous in their own special ways. And I had a really good time watching them. So there's been some good summer movies so far for this. And I hope you all have fun going to the movies this summer. And let me know what you think about these two. You are as positive as I am, if you have some critiques of why these movies are awful, let me know. I probably won't agree with you, but still, I'd love to hear it. Yeah, I had a really good time. So let me know what y'all think. And we'll be back next time with something back in my own little corner. Bye, y'all.